Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and as always, I'm joined by my excellent panel from the ever-shrinking city of Youngstown, Ohio. We have author, activist, and I hate to say this, teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thank you for that rousing introduction. I can't wait to bust the cherry of our new panelists today.
Right. And from the City of Angels, we have Legal Eagle, attorney Peter Haven. Peter, good to talk to you again.
Oh, likewise. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. And I've always thought of myself as being kind of a teacher at heart, but I always tell people, those who can't, teach. So that's perfect for me.
Ooh, I can see this is going to result in a fight later on in the program.
Not at all, not at all.
Right. And, unfortunately, our usual panelist, Bill Conrad, is running a little late. He did call me. Apparently he's moving furniture, but threatens to join us soon. And last, but by no means least, this week we have a guest panelist, Dr. Gary Penn. He is a clinical psychologist and author. So this means we're all under the magnifying glass this week. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me, and I'm happy to be aboard, and we'll see if I could stir things up a little bit.
Oh, it doesn't take much.
Very good. Very good.
Okay. Before we get into the meat and potatoes, as I like to call it, I want to do just a very quick rant. You'll all be glad to hear that this will be my last rant about the NBC coverage of the Sochi Olympic Games. It makes my blood run cold that the closing ceremonies were set for 11 a.m. Central Time, but we in the U.S. have to wait till 7:30 Central to watch them. The rest of the world can watch live, and NBC is the rights holder. Why do we in the U.S. have to take it in the bum? Everyone else can see it, but we can't. Okay. No one's coming up and
advertising. It's advertising, Simon.
No bullshit.
Okay, never mind. I'm wrong. I take it back.
Right.
It's like, Simon, who cares? It's over. Wait, you know. Olympics is over. Who cares?
I care.
Why do you care?
Simon
says, I know. That's right. Peter, I forgot. Simon is an obsession fanatic with curling.
That is an exciting sport, I have to admit. That's one of my favorites.
Well, Simon, after this podcast, I'll give you a private session, and we could discuss your loss and your feelings of betrayal by NBC on this.
Simon, I
rumors have it, Simon. You know, gentlemen, rumors have it. This is just a rumor now, that Simon Barrett is under investigation by NBC for sending bad vodka to Bob Costas and causing him pink eye. as revenge of them having tape delaying their these events and one of the most boring Olympics held, like the last Olympics, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, if you thought this one was boring, wait till the next one. But Simon, you know, I don't know. I'm not an expert on these things, but it just seems to me that every decision that any of these networks make is about money, and the only money angle that I can see is that advertisers don't want to pay for advertising in the middle of the night. They want to optimize it, and there's some sort of agreement or something that says this is this is the agreement. This is when they're going to show it. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
All right. Honestly, I don't want to discuss the subject. You know, I'll just
we're sorry we raised it.
I agree with Peter.
All right. The other interesting story, I found it today, and I really don't want to discuss it because it's too disgusting for words. It comes out of Herkimer, Colorado. Never even heard of the place, but two men are accused of sexually abusing cows. 35-year-old Michael Jones and 31-year-old Reed Fontaine are charged with sexual misconduct and a misdemeanor. Apparently, the owner of a local farm set up video surveillance in his barn and trying to figure out why his cows appeared anxious and were not producing normally. The owner later contacted state police after video revealed the cows were being sexually abused.
Wow.
But police say their investigation found Jones agreed to videotape Fontaine as he tried to have sexual contact with several cows. Okay.
I don't want to say boo, but I'm going to say moo.
Wow. I mean, isn't that the silliest thing you've heard in ages?
I don't know if it's silly. I mean, it's Saturday night. You know, you don't have a date. Come on now. Think about it. Love the one you're with, Simon.
Simon, there's no doubt in my mind that these two were not on marijuana in Colorado.
Are you sure? I mean, you know, possibly this could be a side effect of marijuana.
It's very bad marijuana. I've heard of people doing lots of things on marijuana. Having sex with a bosun is not one of them.
Right.
it sounds like a Far Side cartoon on LSD. That's what it sounds like.
It sounds like a couple of bubbas whose IQ is hovering around 80 to 85. And
high?
Yeah, about 80, 85, you know. And it's just a Saturday night, and they say, well, what do you want to do today, Bill? Well, there's a barn that I know of. It's kind of cool. Why don't we go out there and see if we can get any girls who would be interested in us? And that's probably how it unfolded.
Gary, is there some sort of clinical diagnosis
Hey, Simon?
For these people?
Simon? Wait a minute, guys. You think they went up to the cow and said, got milk? No, no.
Wow.
Sam, you utterly ashamed of yourself.
Okay.
I'm ashamed of myself from commenting on this. Simon's the one who brought it up. You should be ashamed.
Sam, I said you utter be ashamed of yourself. You didn't get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Peter, as a well-known and well-respected attorney, I mean, would you represent these Yahoos?
Everybody who's got legal problems, you know, can be accused of being a Yahoo in one way or another. And, you know, my first question is, you know, I view this, I don't know all the facts and circumstances, but I view this as some type of illness. You know, it seems to me these guys are suffering from something that makes them want to try to have sex with a cow. I mean, I don't know what else to think of. And I defer to Gary's better judgment on this one.
Yeah, well, I certainly, there's a whole cornucopia of issues that these boys might have. But it's just, I wouldn't want to do that, go down that road. But on a prima facie basis, yeah, they're disturbed. But you know what? I think it's basically they're just lonely and kind of stupid and. I mean, on a very non-clinical basis, it's just kind of a sad, depressed couple of guys that just cannot connect with other people, and so they go where they can go. It's very, and when you really think, aside from the hilarity of it all, it's just very, very sad for them to be then inside their own skin and inside their own minds.
Do you think?
Simon, are they vegetarian?
Yeah,
but they do think that cows are sacred.
Yeah, that's right.
Gary, do you think that this is a possible stepping stone behavior that, you know, they start with animals and then maybe they move to something else, or do you think, if you have any idea at all, and I would totally understand if you had no idea at all, that this kind of behavior is just limited to animals?
I'm not an expert in this kind of thing of acceleration into more serious kind of issues like that. But my guess is that this is where it stays. It's just kind of they have some kind of perversion. You know, it could be to inanimate objects, could be to animate objects. But usually in these kinds of issues where people are dealing with things like this, it's just like this is their. This is where they go, and this is what they do. Now, you know, you can make the parallel, like in prison, there's prison gay, because that's your only sexual object. And on some level, if these guys just cannot connect with women, and they're just so broken that way, they go this way, and it becomes a perversion for them, and that's where they stay. But I don't imagine it would accelerate into something more serious like pedophilia or aggression or something like that against women. Although I would not be surprised if it goes more to an aggressive place, because there's probably
Simon?
A lot of anger there.
Is this where the phrase cowboys comes from? I got to say something. These guys, wait a minute. Okay, I'm done being a humorous. So
please don't. You're on a roll.
Going with what you two gentlemen just said, Simon, correct me if I'm wrong. Beast, calling themselves masquerading as humans, are in their 30s or something?
Yeah. According to this, they're reported to be 35 and 31.
Okay. So they probably, based on what you two just said, probably have already done some horrific acts with animals or self-abuse before, and this is probably, you know, and I agree with what you two are saying, that they've had. This couldn't have been a one night stand. Oh boy, do I go again?
Well, are you accusing them of cow tipping? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, cow fucking would be a better word. I would think that they've probably been perverse. You know, done disgusting things. To others and other living things beforehand, and this is part of the buildup. I'm going to what you guys were saying, legally and, you know, the psychology, you know, it's been in your background, and I think it's a good point you brought up, Peter. Would this lead to something worse? Well, probably, because they've probably been going up the ladder already, is what I'm saying. Like, how could you just walk up, just stand up and go, hey, let's go out and have sex with a cow? I wake up during the day and saying that. I mean, I wake up and say, I saw a picture of Sharon Stone the other day at 55, and I go, oh, I want to wake up and have sex with Sharon Stone. Well, Peter, you're a mechanic that you sent me a picture of.
You know, you keep going back to that. You send me these emails, and then I get accused of sending them to you.
You respond.
Well, I thought that something Gary said was interesting, and it was the exact same thing I thought of. You know, when you put people in certain environments, it can have an effect on their behavior. And, you know, he used the phrase prison gay. I don't know much about that, but it just seemed to me that, you know, when men don't have access to so-called normal forms of release, they turn to other forms. And there are all those stock jokes about, you know, the olden days when people were, you know, in charge of, you know, they were separated by more miles and they were alone in the wilderness with their respective herds and things like that. I don't know how much of truth there is in that, or that's just an anecdote. I just don't know. But it does seem to me, obviously, that some of that's going on here. And you know, would I represent them? I'd consider representing anyone who needs legal help. I'm not saying I would, but, you know, it does seem to me that these guys need help. And, you know, what else can you say?
That's the bottom line. Is that they're just broken guys.
How'd they get caught?
Well, apparently a farmer decided to set up some sort of sting operation, and I don't know how the farmer suspected anything, but he must have. And not only did he set up a camera to try and detect this, but apparently they were trying to videotape it themselves, which, you know, that's I imagine that's what you do when you're.
Well, that's
kind
the most disturbing part of all, though, because if I'm doing something that dark, if I'm doing something that disturbed. It's like someone coming back from Vegas and saying, "Hey, Gary, I slept with three prostitutes." Like they want to like tell everyone that they did something so dark. Like that's the thing that's kind of really weird to me. It's like, why would you want to? Is that like you go home and you masturbate afterward?
Yeah,
having sex with the cow.
That's the impression.
By the way,
wait a minute.
I wish these two guys would have had sex with three prostitutes instead of having two cows. By the way, that's number one. Number two, if you're married, having sex with three prostitutes is bad. If you're not married, that's not so bad.
Personally, I want to know, you know, did they start with sheep? You know, and work their way up? But...
if they were videotaping it, that's even now it's premeditated, now it's all that. I mean, what are you get it on YouTube? With Gene Autry singing Get Along Little Doggy in the background?
All right, I just wanted to do this as a little fun segment.
This
believe...
is your foreplay, Simon.
Yeah, right. I do believe that we now have Bill Conrad on the line.
Oh, just in time, Bill, to join in about the cow sex.
Hello.
Hi.
You know...
Okay, you've missed all of the sheep sex and cow sex fun.
Well... You know, sometimes it's really hard to get a date. And, you know, being in Colorado and all the people that you used to be able to hook up with are all stoned out of their mind. And so I guess the only thing you can do is to turn to animals. And that's a really sad thing that our world has become.
Okay. All right. I am absolutely... calling an end to this particular discussion. Okay, let's move on to more interesting. Well, I won't say more interesting, but
how do you beat that? How can you get more interesting than animal sex? I don't get it.
Right. Okay, talking about animal sex. Ted Nugent, is he a friend or a foe for the Republican Party? I mean, even the Cruisinator seems to be avoiding Ted. Sarah Palin's still a supporter. I found this odd. You know, I thought she would have been way too busy watching the Sochi Winter Games from her balcony in Alaska. Sam, I'm going to pick on you, seeing as you're such a fan of Ted Cruz.
That's your boy. You know, Cruz, I never liked Ted Nugent's music. I think he's a jerk, but he's entitled to say what he wants, as stupid as it is. And, I think every time he opens his mouth, he's been inserting the shoe store, and he's becoming more and more irrelevant to political commentary. I mean, because of what he says. I mean, he can't wait to open his mouth. He's a guy whose prime is way behind him. And he's in politics has become his calling card of late. I think he was very active in the last couple of presidential elections. And, you know, other celebrities are. He's calling attention to himself because he's not the center of attention anymore that he once was. And he, instead of getting gorgeous groupies hanging around him, he now gets, you know, right-wing, toothless whack jobs, you know, who love to hear him scream about Obama. And I think what he said was demeaning. You know, I'm not a big fan of the president, but you don't go around calling anything, you know, you just don't say things like that. It demeans the office of the presidency, which is pretty easy, which they do themselves pretty easily, so why add insult to injury? But, you know, like I said, I'm not a fan of Nugent's music. I'm not a fan of what he has to say, but I will defend his right to say it. And that's all I got to say about that. Can we go back to the sex with the cows?
Okay. Ted Nugent is an aging, has-been rocker. What he has to say really shouldn't affect anyone's opinion on politics. But
why not? He speaks for Ted Nugent. Can probably, if he ran for president right now, he's not some whack job. He would be getting 40%, 45%. I mean, all of politics right now, at least on a national level, it's probably on a state level too, is 2 or 3% here and there. He would get probably, if he was running for national office, start off at 45%, because he is saying a lot of Republicans are thinking but would never say. He is basically the id of the Republican Party. Speaking as a psychologist, he's just the id. He is like, fuck you, he's a son of a bitch, fuck you, he's this mongrel. And a lot of people I know on the right feel that way about him. So he's just saying, and he would get people's votes. He's not fringe at all.
He's not fringe.
No, he's only fringe in the fact that he's saying this. But there's so many right wingers who are actually thinking it.
Yeah, but anybody would get it. Look, he'd get 40% of the vote if he was the nominee. I don't even think he'd get that money. I think he'd get 20% if he was the nominee. I mean, but anybody would. If anybody was running against Hillary, you know, John Kerry would get 40% of the vote if he was the only nominee for the Republican Party. I know Peter wouldn't vote for him. And that's an inside joke, guys. I don't see that happening. You know, he could never do that. But I do agree with you. He's a mouthpiece. He's a mouthpiece for the far right whack jobs.
It's not the far right though. It is the Republican Party of today. Especially in Middle America, but certainly he is a Republican Party today that just won't say it. They hate Obama. Now listen, I hated George W. Bush. I still enjoy hating him, but the difference is I think I had just cause, and of course they do as well. But the hatred is I think he really is speaking for a large percentage, a majority of the Republican Party that they would never say out loud. in good company, as they say.
I'm not gonna. I can't argue with that. I think a lot of people love to have people like that say things. It's just that, look, where I live, there is no Republican Party. So if you want to take part in the democratic process, you have to be a registered Democrat, which you guys, believe it or not, I am. But I'm a libertarian. You know, that's what I really am. But there's no Libertarian Party. So I, you know, there's some things about the Democratic Party I really like. A lot of things I dislike. But regardless of who the president is, and I think Bush is a terrible president, and I don't think Obama is much different. Matter of fact, I think Obama is more of a Republican president than Bush is, just out of the Wall Street crowd. But anyway, Nugent's an idiot, but he has a right to be an idiot. And those that follow him off the cliff, he's the Pied Piper, go for it.
Is Nugent more of an idiot than Herman Cain, Donald Trump, Michelle Bachmann? Is he more of an idiot than any of them? Michelle Bachmann, who wants the New Testament to rule more than the Constitution?
Rachel Maddow, Al Sharpton, who should be in prison, but he gets to run for president and steal lots more money. He's a great spokesperson for the
You want to equate...
Honest Charlie. I mean, come on. Okay. They're idiots on both sides.
I'm not a defender of those people, although I would say Rachel Maddow. I say Rachel Maddow's way better than Michelle Bachmann. I would vote for her in a minute.
Who? Michelle Bachmann?
No, I'm talking about Rachel Maddow. I'm saying as far as Sharpton and Rangel, I'm not interested in defending people who do wrong. I'm talking about global parties. It's not even a comparison. If I have a glass of wine,
I agree with you. Both parties suck.
Yeah.
It's time for third party.
But not the same. If I have a glass of wine with dinner and you have a bottle of wine, we're both not drinkers. We're two different people, and the Republicans are alcoholics on crazy right now. Sorry,
not
true.
All of them are.
I'm not all of them.
You're lumping everybody together.
No, as a party, they're nuts.
They are going through growing pains like the Democratic Party did in the 80s with Dukakis and Mondale.
I'm saying right now they're nuts. No.
I don't agree with all of you, but I do agree there are a lot of whack jobs out there on both sides. Unfortunately, politics being what it is today.
You cannot say both sides. It's not fair.
Yes,
one doesn't believe in evolution. One doesn't believe in science.
One is ideologically crazy. Wait a minute. I know a lot of Republicans who don't think that way they do. And you're right. I do know a lot of Republicans who do. You know what? I also know a lot of Democrats who think about the things you're saying.
But it's not the same. You can't make moral equivalence.
If a Democrat doesn't believe in evolution, that's different than a Republican not believing in evolution?
No, but if 70 out of 100 don't and 30 out of 100 don't, they're not the same.
Where do you get your stats from?
I'm talking out of my ass, but I'm saying I would bet you good money that more Democrats believe in evolution than Republicans do, so you can't say that it's the same. It's not the same. They're both certainly flawed, but you can't say that it's equal, because that is the danger that people do now.
When you talk about these issues like evolution and things of that nature, I'm not disagreeing.
Yeah, climate change, evolution.
You're using a typical liberal red herring argument.
Since when is climate change a liberal issue? Since when did that become a liberal or a conservative or a...
No, the issue when? Is, you talk about evolution, gun control, those are all the push-button issues. Excuse me for my wrong term, okay? Push-button issues. I call them smokescreen issues. They're the smokescreen to cover with the most fundamental problem in this country. That's your Democratic Party. Mr. Obama had been Mr. Geithner and Mr. Bernanke and now Ms. Yellen have been the biggest perpetrators of since George W. Bush, which is bailing out the Fed, bailing out the industry, screwing the homeowners, and making Wall Street and the 1% even richer today than they were under George W. Bush, and increasing the income gap. Now, that's the Democratic Party at work. No, that's both parties at work. There is no difference. The only difference is in the smokescreen issues. I'm done. I want to hear everybody else talk.
Sam, okay. do you think that Ted Nugent helps the Republican Party or hurts it? Do you think that Ted Nugent and his comments and the way he speaks out, do you think he helps the Republican Party or hurts it?
Hurts.
Yeah.
I think he was probably neutral because the guy's going to win for governor anyway, unless the Davis woman comes forward. But, yeah, probably hurt a little bit. But, I mean, it's like they have no shame at this point. They'll say anything with Donald Trump and all these people and Bachman, and they almost have no shame. And, by the way, I'm an independent. I am not a liberal Democrat at all. But the Republican Party has just gone off a cliff.
Well, I really agree with a lot of the things that Gary's saying, and Gary, now you know what I've been dealing with. And just so you know, I consider Sam to be very moderate in this scheme. But I do sense a tremendous amount of fear and loathing, and I agree with a lot of what you said. But I actually think that this kind of behavior really hurts the Republican Party, and it according to something in the New Yorker, Ted Nugent just said, he apparently just called Obama a subhuman mongrel, and then he had to kind of backtrack and apologize for that. And, you know, all you have to do is be a Republican and get endorsed by this guy, and you basically handed a silver bullet to your Democratic adversary. Ted Nugent called President Obama a subhuman mongrel, and he supports Republican X. And immediately, you've just, in my opinion, offended a lot of people.
But Gary brought up a great point, Peter. What he's trying to say is, and I correct me if I'm wrong, Gary, if Ted Nugent's coming into the deep red south of Mississippi, he's going to raise money for his Republican opponent.
That's right. But I also agree that he's going to turn off a lot of people too. But to some people, yes,
These celebrities are double. Would you all agree that celebrity endorsements are? There's two sides to it. They really are. Whether it's Sean Penn or all these actors, celebrities, especially the has-beens, not the ones who are currently doing very well with their careers. But the has-beens, they come with that. They're either going to help you, they're going to be red meat for a starving dog, for the supporters, and they're going to be a target on the back, you know, for their opponents, you know, to be able to shoot at them. So they really are a double-edged sword. But I think, I didn't know that Nugent had political aspirations. So if he said that,
there's Bono giving me an endorsement. Bono, who Bono is from YouTube, and then there's Ted Nugent. Again, they're not the same.
Their message isn't the same.
The message isn't so hateful and so.
Why are Democrats running from the president right now?
Because they need to take some Andro gel and put them under their armpits, because the Democrats are pussies. They always have been.
I don't understand that. They can't be. Why would you run from a guy who's won two elections?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Why did Al Gore not ask Bill Clinton to campaign for him? Insane. He lost to George. Think about it. Al Gore lost to George W. Bush. When we had a surplus and we were at peace and loved around the world, and he loses to George W. Bush. Amazing.
He beat George W. Bush.
Well, he should have won by 10 points. He should have won by 10 points. The point is, the Democrats are just little pussies, and it's a shame.
Not Obama. I don't disagree. I think Obama is one of the greatest. I don't like his policies. Okay, I'll be the first one to admit it. But I respect and admire his ability. He beat the Clinton machine, and he annihilated. It was funny. He annihilated Romney. I thought he was going to kill John McCain, and that left him with a lot closer than a lot of people realize. I mean, it really was. The McCain election was a lot closer. You consider all the baggage McCain had. Dealing with the Bush and all that was amazing. But I think Obama and the people he assembles and what he does, this guy is the Ronald Reagan of the left, okay? Better than Clinton, because he beat Clinton. This guy knows how to campaign, not afraid of anything. I think he's a better, as some people rightfully criticize him, I think the guy is a damn good campaigner. He loves to campaign. I don't know why he can't put that into governing mode. I haven't been able to, unless government just so screwed up that it's impossible to fix. Because this guy can campaign. He isn't afraid of anything.
Okay. I'm going to break in. I'm enjoying this argument a great deal, by the way, gentlemen. But I would like to hear some thoughts from the rest of the panel. Let's start with Bill. Or would you prefer to keep out of this?
I don't think I can interject anything new that they haven't covered. I mean, you know, having Ted Nugent as your neighbor or having Ted Nugent endorse you are two completely different things. I would rather have him as my neighbor than having him endorse me. That's the scary thing. He's picked on other people, and he's, you know, he called Sarah Palin the C word and everything. After she said that if it's good enough for Ted Nugent, it's good enough for me. And the next thing you know, he's calling her the C word. So I think he's just a loose cannon. I think he's scary.
Well, I doubt anyone would fault you on that statement. Peter, how about you?
Well, I just really believe with the comments that have been made already today that I see something really hateful and almost scary coming out of Republican camps. And I believe that, you know, they're demonstrating a lot of fear and loathing. And it actually scares me a little bit. It's something that is so hateful and irrational that it bothers me that it's so openly expressed. And when you have a guy who I think does have a lot of people who follow him and look up to him and think that he is the expression of their id, I like that concept. You know, and this is a guy who loves to shoot guns and talk about himself as an alpha male, and he loves to own all the firearms that he can, and he describes the President of the United States as a subhuman mongrel. And, you know, what do you do with a subhuman mongrel? You put it down. You shoot it. And I find something very disturbing in that kind of expression of sentiment. And it concerns me that I do think it has currency in many people's minds today. And I think ultimately this is a really bad development for the Republican Party. I think it further alienates the party from anybody who would hope to have a world that is a more sane, peaceful, and stabilized place. But that doesn't seem to, you know, there's a growing body of feeling that I sense that you know, people really want to rise up and bear arms and shoot the heck out of anything that they think is, you know, in their mind, evil. And, it concerns me and it bothers me. And I don't think he's like any other endorsement. I think he's more problematic than that. And I guess what troubles me is I do sense that many people share his thoughts and sentiments.
Can I chime in one more comment on this, too? One of the things that we blame Obama is that he doesn't know how to play nice in the sandbox with the Senate or the House. And you have somebody like Ted Nugent come in there, and he's the opposite end of the spectrum, where how is he going to bring people together? How is he going to get people with opposing thoughts and values to come together to compromise and to still help out the American people? He's just viral. It isn't going to happen. You know, it's crazy.
Absolutely. I mean, Nugent is not an angle that will bring people together. It's just going to further fracture the party. I mean, the Republicans already have, you know, enough problems with the naughty Tea Party. You know, they're not gaining any ground with the average voter. Or maybe I'm wrong. Gary, am I wrong?
Say that one more time, that gaining ground with the average voter. You know what? I'm so puzzled by this, but it's all, and I think that I appreciate that Peter appreciated the idea of the id, but I think really that's what's happening here. And it's like the idea of I'll get hot girls if I use a Fusion razor, or I'll get hot girls if I drink some kind of beer. It's very much, it's bloodlust right now. And I think you're right, Simon, that I don't know how much that can go. I really don't feel this, but it sounds in a little bit like 1930s Germany in the way of the way they push forward the argument, and they push forward, this idea of anger and rage. I don't know. I think that's a universal appeal. Now, if they can say, to other parts of the world, other parts of our voting bloc, will join us, then we're in trouble. But if they're so, I think it's a limited. I'm hopeful that somehow this is just kind of a 10-year arc, and it's going to go away, and more rational early 90s Republicans, the Dick Armies and the Gingriches will come back in, who could actually politic well. But I don't know.
Dick Armey, there's a real good guy. He could be in jail. So
I'm not a fan. Right now, he's like Churchill right now.
No, that's an insult to that. Come on. The Republican Party is rightfully so having a civil war, just like they did in 1856, and it's going to be it's going to be a little more libertarian, less government party that comes out of it. The kooks will form their own right-wing party, which will be made out of Republicans, religious fanatics who are Democrats, religious fanatics who are independents. I mean, let them have a religious party. Go for it. Go for it. So it'd be just like this, just like in Massachusetts used to be with the Puritans, look at Massachusetts now, it's one of the wonderful states, and all that sort of stuff. But in this day,
you should be very careful when you say that. You should be very careful. There's a large percentage of Americans that are evangelical Christians. A large percentage in the Republican caucus right now. And these people would rather have, who firmly believe in their hearts, that the New Testament and the Bible supersedes the Constitution. So you should be very careful when you say let them have it.
I know they can come after me anytime. They know where I live. They should read my book, The Book of Eli, okay? They'll learn what I did for politics, heaven and hell and all in between. But I will tell you this. This country, the Constitution, is very important to me. And it's clearly, even our founding fathers, the separation of church and state, and I'm the first time, we allowed that to happen, break that wall, that invisible wall that had been up. It's been a flood. The floodgates have opened. It's too bad. It really is, because these people want to have a Christian nation or whatever you want to say it, and it's not going to work. The country wasn't founded on that, and I think the pushback is going to happen. But I think where this anger is coming from, Gary, and something we've talked about for years on this show, in the last couple of years, from the right, from the left, from the center, from the top, from the bottom, is the has versus the have-nots. That's where this anger is coming from. That's why people are pissed off. That Occupy Wall Street crowd, the Middle Eastern revolutions, some might be able to say those are religious revolutions and whatnot. There's a revolution that's going on in Ukraine, the revolution that's going on in Caracas as we speak. This is have versus have-nots, because never in our history since the dawn of man have we seen such a gap in rich and poor, and the poor fighting back, and they're angry. And this is going to be a massive worldwide French type revolution that's going to happen, because people have had it, and that's where the anger is coming from. And I think that's what Nugent, instead of saying what he says, how he said it was absolutely wrong. What he said was stupid and ignorant and all that. But right, it played to a certain part. But, you know, I've seen, look, I saw a Democrat say something about the thing about the Romney grandchild. You know, that was despicable. The guy who said something about Sarah Palin was despicable too. I mean, what she said was stupid, but what he said was even stupider. And so, you know, we've got to put it on into context.
Come on. It's hard to out stupid Sarah Palin.
He did with what he said. But what he said it was, and he was, you know, and I'm sure he'll end up being, and I'm sure they'll bring him back. But you're right. I mean, I'm not saying, look, Sarah Palin, she can see that she saw the Olympics from Alaska. She, you know, she was good. But look, it's just him.
I forget. I remember hearing about that. But what exactly did that guy say about Sarah Palin?
She should eat shit, I think.
Oh.
I think something like that. I can't remember the actual thing. She said something about one of her idiotic remarks about, I think about homosexuality. Don't quote me on that one. But what he said is she should be forced to do what slaves had to do back in the 1800s, eat their master's shit. Something of that nature of that. And, you know, I've read a lot about the antebellum South and whatnot. I'm not saying that ever happened, but I've never seen any written things, and I've read slave diaries and all that sort of stuff, but I've never saw that happen, but I'm sure it did, because he probably something, or I never saw that did that, but he's a commentator, or was a commentator, and, you know, we have to hold, I'm sick of double standards. Let's hold everybody to the same standard, regardless of what part, what they are and whatnot, and that was that. But my big thing is, gentlemen, I think the anger comes from the haves versus the have-nots, and, you know, there might be little, you know, bits and pieces of that, but that's what we're seeing right now.
Well, yeah, right now, the press is hammering on the idea that, you know, the 1%ers control the 99%ers. In fact, there was a particularly stupid comment made by can't remember his name, but he's a billionaire, and his claim was, you know, his vote, should count way more than the average guy. Stupid comment.
It is a stupid comment, but I think he believes it's true.
Right.
This is what happens, is when people let out, this is what Nugent did, this is what this guy did, this is what they really feel.
Yeah.
This is what they really feel and believe. And that's just the issue, you know, is like, that's what they believe. And a lot of Republicans, now, we could get into, if you want to, why do Republicans vote against their interests, which blows my mind. Because, you know, why do the red states who take more government largesse, why do they vote Republican? If you guys can answer that, maybe you can get into my field, because it really does puzzle me.
Okay. There's several more subjects I have on the docket, shall we say. The Michael Dunn trial. I will swear on air. What the fuck went wrong? You know, three guilty counts of attempted murder, and a hung jury on the one person he did kill. You know, will Florida go again? Peter, you're the legal eagle. Your thoughts?
In theory, I'm the legal eagle. This mystified me somewhat as well. I didn't understand how they found guilty for attempted murder, but not guilty for actual murder. But we talked about this before, and obviously the prosecution felt that there were problems with their murder case because they brought charges for lesser included offenses like attempted murder. So I don't really know, but I don't view it as a disaster for the prosecution at all. They got convictions on very serious charges, and it's my understanding that he could get up to 60 years just on those charges. And they do have the right to re-prosecute him on the murder charge. And I suspect that will result in some sort of plea deal, or they'll finish the job the second time around. I don't view it as a failure. I think that they got 75% of what they were looking for, and I think they're going to get the other 25% eventually, or they'll get a deal on it, and he'll do some serious time. I would need to see more of what went on at that trial to express any more definitive opinion about it, but I don't view it as a prosecution failure. I think he's going to go to jail for a while, and given my understanding of the facts, he seems to have clearly committed a crime and deserves it.
All right, but maybe I didn't phrase my question the right way.
That's a kind way of you saying that I failed to answer the question. So I'll try to do it again. Thank you.
Okay. So there are four people involved, four young black teenagers in an SUV. One dies, the others, get away, shall we say, and Michael Dunn is found guilty of trying to kill three of them by shooting guns at them, and does actually kill the fourth. But the jury doesn't find him guilty of the actual killing, just the intent to try and kill the other three.
Well, what I think is going on here is a distinction between first degree murder and second degree murder. And first degree murder is the classic definition of murder that most of us learn from watching TV shows. It's literally the intentional, premeditated killing of another human being with malice aforethought and without justification or excuse. That's the typical murder mystery killing. And second-degree murder is an effort by the law to basically capture homicide crimes as murder, but in situations where it wasn't an intentional, premeditated murder. For example, if you have someone who wants to, let's say, it's always tough for me to come up with examples on this, but let's say you want to do target practice, and so you tell a guy to go down and stand by a tree, and you do something crazy. You put an apple on his head, or you ask him to hold an apple out in his hand, and you're trying to shoot the apple, and you have every intention of shooting the apple, and you don't mean to kill the person at all, but of course you end up shooting the guy and you kill him. Now, the strict definition of murder one would not capture that as a murder crime. So states have come up with murder two, which basically says you were recklessly indifferent to the high likelihood that your behavior was going to kill this person. So even though you didn't intend to kill him, we're not going to let you off the hook. And so I think what happened in the Dunn trial is they found him guilty of attempted second-degree murder, which is reckless, depraved heart murder. And I think they also tried to get a murder charge to stick, and they couldn't do it, and the jury had trouble finding that he intended to kill these people as opposed to just recklessly shooting at a vehicle. And I think that, you know, the jury may have been sifting through many different facts, because it's also true that you can formulate the intent to kill someone in a millisecond. You know, if someone decides to kill someone and then they think about it for 30 seconds and then do it, that can be prosecuted as a murder one offense. So they did deadlock on the what I understand to be the first degree murder charge, and they found him guilty of attempted second degree murder, and the prosecution is still trying to get him on murder one. And
They deadlocked on murder one. They did not go for murder two.
No, they found him guilty of attempted second-degree murder.
Attempted?
Yeah, that's right. Attempted second-degree murder. So the prosecution...
Against the three people that lived.
They found him guilty of attempted second-degree murder, and for whatever reason, it doesn't appear that they charged him with second-degree murder. They wanted to charge him with murder one. They wanted to get a murder one conviction. Now, I don't know why they did that, but that's my understanding of what happened here. They didn't get him on murder one.
No.
But they did find him guilty of attempted second-degree murder.
Oh, okay. Someone come to my help.
I'd like to chime in, Simon. I think the real issue is that people are so upset about the law itself, because I think these jurors followed the law as best they could. And the law is just about, you know, it's all about fear. It's all about anxiety. And it isn't about justice. And the convictions were not about this boy being killed. The convictions were about attempting to kill the other people, and it feels bad. I mean, I think all of us feel that if we're at a gas station, or if we are children in a gas station, we don't want someone to feel that they could bring out a gun and threaten them. We just don't want that, and it feels ugly and nasty to us. And I think that's what leaves me with a sick feeling, is we are the NRA is feeding red meat to our darkest parts of our psychology, and it's really ugly and it's scary.
I agree with most of that. I think people are toting guns, and they feel emboldened by that, and they feel like they have a right to open fire on people. And I do feel the NRA and many gun enthusiasts are contributing to that. And I also feel that jurors really do try to apply the law to the best of their ability. I think they really care, and they really try to get it right. And even though there are some aberrations that people always look to and they say, well, they clearly weren't doing it there, far more often than not, they really do. They really try. And I think that, you know, again, I'm too far removed from it to be able to express a greater opinion, but I think there were some subtleties in the separate crimes that were charged here, and I think the prosecution knew that going in, and that's why there were these different counts, and the jury obviously got hung up on some things. But the game ain't over. It's not over yet. It hasn't gone to verdict yet on the murder charge, and we'll see where that goes. This is just basically another way of saying that, you know, that phase of the trial is still going on.
But, I mean, realistically and financially, do you think Florida will take this to court one more time?
Well, I think they will. It reminds me a little bit of the Phil Spector trial. And in the Phil Spector trial, he was also accused of second-degree murder. And there were a lot of swirling and confusing facts. And they couldn't get a conviction the first time around, but they didn't stop. They didn't stop. They went back, and they got a conviction the second time around. Now, this isn't quite as high profile as that, but they're... You know, they've already said they plan on re-prosecuting him, and to me, I think they'll follow through on that. They've already done the work. They've already prepared for the case. They already know what the witnesses are going to say. They've already gone through one attempt at a trial. So your second attempt is necessarily, in my opinion, going to be a little bit better than the first. And this time, the jury in that is going to have some knowledge that he's already been found guilty of some crimes, and they're going to have time to sit on that. And they're going to focus more on the murder charge as opposed to trying to go after multiple targets. So I do think they're going to prosecute him again unless that he and his lawyers decide that, you know, they'll enter into some sort of plea deal. And I don't know what will happen in that regard. Sometimes people want to fight just for the sake of fighting, and sometimes lawyers want to fight because, they may get publicity out of the case just by being his defense attorney. I really don't know. It's difficult for me to say for sure, but I do think that they'll go forward.
And Sam, do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, I think the guy should try, but you've got to go through the legal system first, and that's that. I think what he did was stupid, but it seems like ever since firearms have been invented, people have done dumb things with them. We see it all the time. I think we're all getting immune to it, which is getting even scarier. It's ridiculous that some guy hears some loud music and starts blowing people away. He's lucky that other people didn't have guns and blew him away. But now I think, as Peter says, the system will, spit and chew it out and grind it up, and eventually he'll be seeing a lot of time. I don't know if Ford has the death penalty, but he should face it if they do. If not, he should be... He should learn what prison gay is about.
Well, these are the kinds of stories that, in my mind, tell me that, when people always say guns don't kill people people. And I think about stories like this, and I think about the Zimmerman trial, because for me, those incidents arose not because of the person per se, but because the person had a gun. And I really believe that their behavior was motivated and fueled and driven by the fact that they had a firearm. And I don't think Zimmerman would have ever risked confronting Trayvon Martin in any way if he didn't feel emboldened by having a gun. And I don't think this guy, with his wife or fiance in the car, would have gotten into an altercation with four African-American youths unless he felt emboldened by the fact that he had a gun. And I think that when people carry firearms in these types of settings, in my opinion, it changes their behavior. And it leads to this kind of stuff. And I know people strongly disagree with that, but, to me, the facts just speak for themselves.
If it was legal to get grenades at the local Walmart, I bet you he may have thrown a grenade at the car.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with you. So if grenades were as accessible as guns, and he had a couple of grenades in his glove compartment, my guess is he would pull out one of those and pull the pin and say, oh, I felt threatened by all these kids.
Yeah, and I think at a certain level, he wanted to go on some sort of shooting spree, or he felt like he was justified in doing it. He was basically imposing his own form of justification at that moment. And I think Zimmerman more or less was doing the same thing, and these are not isolated incidents. And this is the problem when you have firearms floating around in the world. And some people will say, well, that's just a necessary price to be paid in everyone's right to keep and bear arms, and I don't agree with that. I think that price should not be paid. I think we should try to avoid that. But I get the feeling that most Americans strongly disagree with that, and that scares me a little bit.
Bill, you've been quiet. Do you want to chime in?
I'm not sure there's anything else to be said. I think he felt more empowered than he normally would have. I remember reading the story that after he did shoot up the car, that 6 hours later or so, he found out that he had actually killed the youth. And he was out walking his dog and everything else. And after he found that out, he was upset, according to the story. But he never called the police to say, you know what, I did a really bad thing. They had to find him first. They had to seek him out. You know, if he was really, really upset, if it was me in that situation, again, if I didn't have a gun, I would have probably gone away and said, you know what, this was just an asinine thing that took place at a gas station and just, you know, shrugged it off. But because he felt empowered, he tried to take justice into his own hands and probably tried to scare him away. He probably never really intended on killing him. You know, he never went to the police and said, you know what, I really screwed up and I don't know what to do. He never did that. And that's the part that I have a problem with.
I never heard that fact before.
Yeah, I think that's the part that everyone fights with. You know, I don't own a gun. Never have, but I'm pretty certain that, you know, if I was at a gas station and shot up a vehicle because I felt threatened, I might just be tempted to call the police, but that's just me.
We've all had those moments, Simon, where we've seen red. Certainly, we drive. I mean, I've been behind a car that wouldn't turn on a green, you know, turn signal. And if I had a cannon and I'm late, I would blow the guy off the plant. I mean, we've all had those feelings. Like, come on, move already, or someone cuts you off, and you feel red, but you just don't want to sit there and give that part of your psychology the need to act on it. I mean, God forbid, you know, just think about that. If we all had guns with us, it's just so dangerous.
Right. But, you know, what good is us all having guns? You know, I get angry about things. If I had a gun, you know, would I pull it out and shoot someone?
I don't know, but if you feel powerless your whole life, you feel like the world's getting over on you, you feel like people aren't watching on you, you listen to, you know, the Sean Hannitys and the Glenn Becks of the world, and you start to get angrier and angrier, I mean, it's just you just have this rage that comes forward within you, and you have this, like, it's this primal, dark, you know, Jung would call it the shadow, this dark side of you, and thank God, you know, all of us, most of us don't have guns on our person, or, you know, in a stressful world, and I got fired from my job, my wife was cheating on me, something happened, I'm in a horrible mindset. And, you know, a slice of life happens, and all of a sudden you feel like I have to. And, you know, like the most dangerous call that a police officer can make is domestic call. It's the most that's where most of the police officers get killed, is because there's so much rage in that moment. It isn't like gang warfare. It isn't like drug stuff. It's a man and a woman at home, and there's a huge argument, and there's guns there, and it's this rage that overtakes people, and the idea I says we will all be safer if we're packing. It's just so wrong on so many levels, but it feeds core kind of feeling, and it gives us this feeling of control and power, and it's very, very dangerous in my view.
Okay. I'm going to drift back to, you know, the Republican versus Democrats discussion. There's undoubtedly more Republicans than Democrats that love guns. but no one wants to seem to want to deal with the problem. Peter, I mean, do you think there are too many damn guns out there?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, the problem is that for many people, as we've talked about, who feel, you know, disempowered or disenfranchised or whatever they feel tremendously empowered and protected by having guns. And I think it's a kind of addiction. I think they don't want just one firearm. They want many. And they want, you know, as many of the biggest, baddest weapons as they can have. And there is a tremendous gun industry that makes billions and billions of dollars selling them all this stuff. And we took the lid off of any attempted gun control early in the Reagan administration, and we let the genie out of the bottle. And now I think they're flooding everywhere, and I just don't think you can have a rational discourse with many people about any kind of gun control. They won't listen. They don't hear. They don't listen. They don't agree. And I don't know what we're going to do about it. I think there are people who want to address the problem, but I worry that they're just yelling at a deafening crisis. You know, to me, when you have incidents like Sandy Hook where, you know, little kids are gunned down, if that doesn't make you change your mind about these issues, then I can't think of anything that will. And it didn't. You know, people became more entrenched. They would rather defend the rights of the shooter to possess the gun than they would defending the rights of innocent people not to be killed. And that's where we are, and I don't know how to get around it. I don't think there is any. For me personally, I don't see any hope of getting around it. I fear that the genie is out of the bottle, and I can't see anything ever putting it back in now. And that, to me, is scary because that just results in some sort of endless proliferation of guns everywhere, and people who don't have them start to feel like they're the only ones who don't.
I loved your analogy, the genie out of the bottle. Indeed it is. I mean, you could put the biggest gun control laws ever known to man in place, but you know, as the saying goes, the bad guys will still have them. Sam, any thoughts on that?
Well, I've noticed that it was kind of good things on the Senate district that Democrats are in if they're pro or anti-gun. Obviously, a lot of, in order to get, again, they pander to whoever they can. So I've noticed there's a lot of Democrats who are out there who are pro-gun. As many Republicans, you know, I agree with that at that point. You know, we've debated this issue from, you know, one end of the spectrum to the other. I think we're going to solve the problem, I think. You know, I understand why some people, I have a gun in my home. I hope I never have to use it. But I have it not because I'm a gun lover, because I am, you know, I don't have a tactical nuclear weapon, I don't have a bazooka. I don't understand why some people have to have 500 weapons. I think there needs to be a reasonable limit on how many weapons one person can have. But that makes me out of the, you know, not in the mainstream. However, I think people have a right to protect the, you know, the home is the castle. I don't want anybody coming in here. I mean, I realize that, you know, even my handgun is probably not going to stop some guy, 6'11" or some, you know, or someone hyped up on something, but it makes me feel better. I mean, to have it. Again, I hope I never have to use it. I don't go hunting. I don't go to any of that other stuff. But I understand why people want to have a weapon in their home to protect their home. I also understand when I was watching the BBC live feed on the Ukraine, this is the conspiracy theorist in me, I noticed the revolutionaries, a lot of men hunting weapons and handguns, but they didn't, and the police had some had automatics and machine pistols and all those sorts of things. So there is a big, I can also understand why some people don't trust their government, they want to have that weapon to be able to fire back if they're ever in a situation like that. If that is going to happen in America, it might. It sure did in the 1770s, and it did happen again in the 1860s. And it's happened throughout history in this country with violence has been, you know, this country is founded in violence. I think the world.
Yeah, but it's all about, degree. I mean, it's all about degree. I mean, if you want to have a gun, have a gun. But I don't want someone to be able to go into a gun show and buy 50 or 100 guns without any background checks, and then buy any kind of guns, any kind of magazines, without any kind of firepower, and then use that. You know, if you want to sit there and buy a gun, I mean, listen, I have a patient of mine who was arrested because he was outside a bar with an open beer. Now, fine, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. But if that's the way our society wants to work on that kind of regulation, that's fine. But the idea of unlimited access to guns and the firepower.
I agree with you on the keyword firepower there. You know, if I want a tactical nuclear weapon, why can't I have one? I mean,
it's about politics and it's about laws. What happened in Florida is about laws. It's about that the law said that it's okay. It's okay to have a gun in your car. It's okay to sit there and to bring it out on a minor confrontation. This is about laws. This isn't necessarily about guns. I agree that I don't think we would be better with an Australian position on guns, but that's not who we are as a country. That's fine. That I can understand. What really gets to me is that the laws right now are going the wrong way. And so it's about laws, and the people who are voting for those laws, even though there's plenty of Democrats who are gun owners, the people who are driving that law are Republicans. It's not that Democrats have guns and Republicans have guns. That's not the issue. That is a straw man. I'm sorry. That is a complete straw man. It is about laws and what kind of country we want to live in, and how we want to think about ourselves and our families and our society.
Well, obviously the Floridians who feel that they're, for whatever reason, they don't feel that their police or the government can protect them and they had to pass these laws. I don't know. I don't live in Florida. I've sure seen a lot of crazy cases coming out of there lately, a lot of crazy cases.
You can feel whatever you want. You don't want to serve black people, but it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right just because you feel it.
I'm sure I'm not disagreeing with that, and I'm sure most of the laws in Florida, you know, I'm sure most law enforcement, like in Ohio, you know what law enforcement spends most of its time on? Not protecting people. DUIs, speeding tickets. Revenue enhancers, and maybe if police had better priorities about protecting the populace, people would feel respect, and they wouldn't be pissed off at the cops if the cops are doing their jobs, and they wouldn't pass stupid laws like that. But maybe they don't feel that they're doing that in Florida. I don't live in Florida. I don't know. Maybe people feel threatened by African Americans, you know, the immigration thing down there. Again, I don't live in Florida. I don't know. But obviously enough people voted and lobbied there. And of course, the gun, don't forget, at least we forget the ammo makers and the gun manufacturers from lobbying the politicians. In Ohio, Gary, these same people, along with the chain restaurants, the corporations, lobbied our idiots in Columbus, Republicans and Democrats, and they voted to let people bring guns in the bars. Now, how stupid is that?
I just need to break in for a second. Whoever is doing the soundtrack for... you know, a sex movie, can they please stop it?
Are those the two guys who are getting turned on about thinking about cows? Cow sex? Sex cow.
I'm sorry, it was probably me. I was just snickering and I was trying to hold it back, so...
carry on.
I really liked Gary's... explanation of seeing red. It kind of reminded me a lot of the Michael Douglas falling down movie. And obviously, because the gun was available, and even with the movie, it's kind of what happened here. But I think the big point is what we've talked about with the NSA, is people feel very compelled to protect their rights. There's so many things that are, you know, that people are getting, law enforcement's getting very petty upon, and they're regulating things that are common sense, that people with guns want to feel like they got the right to have a gun. And with them shutting down so many of our rights and infringing on our rights, they really want to feel like they're going to go as far as they can to the boundary of the law and do what they want to do because the law says it's okay for you to do this. And they're very watchful of losing their rights. And so I think that we're getting more and more of these volatile situations because guns are involved on some of these laws. But truly, people are worried that we're going to lose all of our rights. And, you know, now when push comes to shove and you have a seeing red situation, then people turn to violence. And I think that's really kind of what's going on in America. That's just kind of my spin on it.
I really feel like even if these weren't legal rights to be able to carry these weapons, I think people would try to possess them and carry them anyway because they would say, you know, damn the government. This is my right, I'm going to do it, and they can pry this gun out of my cold, dead fingers if that's what they want to do. And there's just kind of a sense, I feel, that people think they're justified despite what the law says. And this finding out these facts about what this individual, this Dunn person did, seems to confirm that in my mind. He didn't feel like he was legally justified in using that firearm, because if he did, he would have reported the matter to the police. He wanted it to go away. And he didn't want to deal with the law, because at a certain level, you know, he knew that he may have run afoul of it. And that's my reading of that fact. If you really feel like you've been, you know, attacked by people, and you've shot to defend yourself, you contact the authorities. Go
yes,
get those
yes,
guys.
Yes, but that's, if you look at it from an actuarial basis, yes, that is true. Of course, what you're saying is correct. But, again, maybe 20 out of 100 would do that, and if the law's in place, 50 out of 100 would do that. So what we're trying to do from a political position is you're trying to minimize things. If some people, I guess, could get 50-round magazines, if they weren't available, they could somehow import them from other countries or so forth, but you just can't go down to the store and buy one.
Well,
so,
I agree. I agree with you, Gary. It came out wrong, but I'm agreeing with you. What worries me is that even if you do have these laws in a place, what really scares me is that these people will still do it anyway. But I fundamentally agree with you. You have to try to restrict.
You have to do something. Yeah,
you have to do something. You can't. The easier you make it for anybody to own any kind of assault weapon that they want, the more likely you're going to have these kinds of incidents, and the more easy you make it for people to possess whatever firearm they want, the more firearms you're going to have, and the more of these incidents you're going to have. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. We can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Just so we're clear, I use that analogy. I think we could, but, you know, it would require a tremendous consensus that it needs to be done, and I have doubts we'll ever get to that consensus. You know, the Australians did implement a program that was very successful in getting rid of you know, military-style assault weapons by buying them back and restricting future sales. It can be done. People can accomplish just about anything when people are united in a relatively single purpose, but not at present, in my opinion.
You know, Australia certainly is the prime example. I mean, they cut gun deaths by something like 80%. It was
a hard road to hoe, but they did it. You know, that they got rid of all of the you know, semi-automatics and automatics, and yeah, but it was buyback system. But if you didn't, you know, enter into it, and you were found, you know, to be running foul of the system, you were in big, big trouble. Would that work here in the U.S.?
Well, would that, if that law were enacted, would it have an impact? Absolutely. I'm not sure if I don't know what is meant by big, big trouble, but, you know, once you set policy and enact law, you know, Gary's right. It has an impact, and it would definitely have an impact. And if you restricted future sales and had a buyback program and then cited or punished people for continuing to possess these things or however it's structured, it would definitely have an effect. The problem is there's no you would need a majority consensus to be able to do that. And, you know, Australia implemented that after experiencing situations just like we've experienced at Columbine, in Colorado and at in Connecticut. And our system is paralyzed by divisiveness and being able to implement that kind of reform. The Australians responded to it by saying, look, it's obvious this is a problem and we need to do something about it. So it would work if it was implemented, but it's implementation that's the problem.
Okay, you know, implementation is always the hardest part. Yeah, the clarion call is, you're taking guns away from good people, but the bad people will still have them. That really didn't seem to be true in Australia. But maybe it would be true here.
Well, listen, the bad people get guns because, again, I could go out today and buy 100 guns, and I could sell them. I can give them to someone to sell on the black market. So the bad people get guns for a reason, and if they just don't get the guns for no reason. They get the guns because you can buy them. They're not registered. You don't know who owns them after you walk out of the store or what have you. And then all these guns are in the black market that people can buy. So if you took out instead of having 1 million guns out there, you'd have 100,000 guns. A lot fewer bad people would have guns. It's so simple. But this is, again, this is science. This is climate change. This is statistics. These are things that you don't, if you don't let feelings and all these things come forward, you could come on the other side of it and say, oh, okay, that makes sense. Let's follow what the facts are.
Yeah. And the other thing
bad
I would add.
Bad guys will kill you without guns if they're bad guys.
Well,
run you over with a car. They'll take a meat cleaver to your head. They'll poison you. They'll beat you with their
I would death. Rather you have a meat cleaver than a semi-automatic gun, believe you me.
How about neither?
Well, if it's one or the other, we're not going to outlaw meat cleavers.
Would you rather have your head chopped off or burned at the stake?
Well, Simon would say
I'd rather have a hot steak than a cold chop. Knock, knock, knock.
You know, another thing that I would add to what you both have said, and I agree with you, is that, you know, this notion that we divide the world into good people and bad people, I would question. You know, presumably the mother of the Sandy Hook shooter was a quote-unquote good person. It's my understanding that she was a member of the NRA, and she was a gun enthusiast, and she had a small arsenal. And she clearly didn't control it, and her mentally ill son took it and used it. You know, Plaxico Burress walked into a New York nightclub restaurant, whatever it was, a few years ago, and his gun went off. Thankfully, no one died, but it went off. It could have easily killed someone. This whole notion that we divide the world into good and bad people misses, in my point, in my opinion, some of the things we're talking about with respect to, like, Zimmerman and Dunn. These are people, in my opinion, whose bad behavior was motivated entirely, if not largely or significantly, by the fact that they actually had the gun in their possession. It brings out a side of us that, as Gary points out, exists within all of us and can emerge. And if you empower that, you empower that dark side. And, you know, you can have a good person capable of doing dark things if they're empowered in the right way. And that's a big part of the problem, in my opinion, in addition to this whole notion that the world is divided into good guys and bad guys.
That's a good point.
Okay, folks, we're almost flat out of time, which is a shame, because we're not going to have time to discuss Ukraine or the Miranda Barber, you know, serial killer that isn't. But hey, there's always next week. So let's go around the table one time. Gary, I'm going to start with you. What are your parting thoughts for us today?
I'm just all jazzed up right now. I feel like I just had a rock star on the Red Bull. A lot of fun. You know, I love talking politics, and all smart people, all insightful people, and it's just a pleasure. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, this is terrific, and I'm honored, and I thank you very much for the invite, and maybe in the future I can be invited again. It was my pleasure.
Absolutely fun to have you. And, Sam, I'm sure you'll have something abusive for me.
Okay, now, my turn. Is it my turn?
Sam, you're up.
I guess I'm sorry. I just want to thank Gary. Pleasure having you on. I hope Sam invites you again.
Thank you.
I'm going to have a huge glass of wine after arguing with you. It was wonderful. I love it. The more the merrier. Welcome to the monkey house, as Von Gutt would say. Welcome to the madhouse, as I say on Sundays. I love it. Peter, you're great. Bill, better late than never. You came on. Simon, a pleasure. I do want to say two things. If you didn't think the Ukraine revolution was about have or have not, go on the BBC website and take a look at the revolutionary opening up the presidential palace there. You talked about something right out of the French Revolution. That's what happened. And the people in there why they overthrew that government for the corruption purposes is just amazing what I've been following. Also, I'm a big movie buff, as you all know, and I am amazed that the guy who was the bad guy in The Three Amigos, El Chapo, was really the largest drug dealer in Mexico cartel. And they caught him.
Absolutely.
Sam, what did you call him? What did you call him?
It's El Chapo. Isn't that how you pronounce it? Chapo?
Yep.
He's the guy from Three Amigos. He was the bad guy in The Three Amigos. And he was really a bad drug cartel guy. You know all about it? Have a pleasant week, everybody.
Okay. Peter.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I'm really glad to welcome Gary aboard. Gary, I think you'll find that it's much easier to get on this program than it is to get off. So I think that you will be a welcome addition, and I personally look forward to that. I think it's wonderful. You give me a breather, and you know, we've got a. A few problems to solve still, but I thought we got through a lot today, and I was very grateful. Thanks to everyone.
Right.
And I could have sworn that the bad guy in The Three Amigos was called El Guapo, but, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
I thought it was El Chapo.
Well, I think that's your attempt at a Spanish pronunciation influenced by Ohio dialect.
Hey,
that's my opinion.
Peter, you in Southern California, you're obviously bilingual. I am not. I'm sorry.
See, soy marinero, soy capitán.
Would you rather have me talk about men having sex with cows, or would you rather have me talk about chapo versus guapo?
Please, please, please. Don't talk about that.
Okay. And
Peter,
well,
where's the beef? Peter, where's the beef?
Where's the beef? That's a good one. That was our theme a week ago, and it rises again. I like that. Thank you.
And Bill, your talking thoughts.
I really enjoyed having a new member with us to stretch me a little more. I'm very conservative in my thoughts and beliefs, and I'm always challenged, and I enjoy it so much because there's always different views than what I thought I was bringing to the board. Additionally, I'm sure that there'll be more excitement in the Ukraine for next week, so I do hope that we do get a chance to talk about that with all of you. You guys all have a great week, and thank you so much for being there.
And you can guarantee Ukraine is going to be on the menu.
Simon, what's the one last thing? What's the over-under on Tsar Putin bringing the tanks in to the Ukraine now that the Olympics is over?
Putin isn't going to go for it. It would be too stupid for words. He's going to sit tight and let Ukraine do what it needs to do, then he'll start leaning on them heavily. Okay, until next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye. Thank you.